well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am so glad you're with us on the program today. You know, we've been talking a lot about the threats to our Second Amendment rights, but today we're going to be talking about a Second Amendment success story of sorts in Connecticut, where lawmakers are taking a pause on gun control this session, which is interesting because at the beginning of the year, it looked like there were a number of gun control bills that posed a threat to the what remains of the right to keep and bear arms in Connecticut. But no, that is not the case. So join us to talk about this, Holly Sullivan, head of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Take a look and a listen. Holly, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you today.
Thank you so much for having me, as always.
Absolutely. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I want to start with the state legislative session because I ran across this story in the Stanford Advocate this week. Now, I just want to get your take on this because I think there's a little bit of spin here. The story starts this way. A year after reinforcing one of the nation's strictest gun control laws, Connecticut legislators are not expected to mount a serious effort at passing new restrictions on firearms or gun ownership during this year's short budget session, according to legislative leaders. Of the hundreds of bills that remain viable ahead of the legislature's May 8th deadline, only a handful deal directly with firearms and none would restrict ownership of particular weapons. The co-chairman of the legislature's Judiciary Committee, State Representative Steve Staffrum, Democrat from Bridgeport, said lawmakers have decided not to pursue major gun legislation in 2024. Now, is it that lawmakers have decided not to do this? Is it that, or maybe the better question is why have lawmakers decided not to do this? Is it out of the goodness of their hearts? Do they think that the gun laws in Connecticut are just fine? Because I remember when you and I spoke at the beginning of the session, you were concerned about multiple gun control bills that were introduced this year, right?
Yeah, so there's no doubt. They absolutely tried for it. So while a bill didn't originate in the Judiciary Committee, which is where we normally see it, a bill was raised. A lot of folks know, obviously, our federal senator, Richard Blumenthal. His son is actually a representative in our Connecticut legislature. So this bill was actually raised by Representative Matthew Blumenthal. And in fact, his father actually wrote an article for the New Haven Register advocating for this bill once it was launched. So essentially, the content of this bill, what it said, that for a 1,000-foot perimeter of any polling location, ballot box, anywhere votes are tallied or counted, even throughout the entire period of early voting, that would all become a gun-free zone. So in a town like mine, I am a selectman in the town of Southbury, Connecticut. We don't have any voting locations in schools. So we're not accustomed to them being gun-free zones, nor should they be gun-free zones. Because, you know, we have to come from work. We have obligations throughout the day. So this would have essentially shut down Main Street for gun owners for the entire period of early voting, not to mention referendums, school budgets. How can anybody possibly know that? Right. So this is a major problem. It also would have impacted groups getting together, like, you know, Democratic town committee meetings, Republican town committee meetings. They meet in town hall. There's a ballot box outside. You're making this a gun-free zone for a significant portion of time. So CCDL jumped on this bill when we saw it. We were the first ones to identify it, flag it, and say, hey, this one's a problem. They actually raised it in the Government and Elections Committee, which is very different. And that's where Representative Blumenthal sits. We had between 400 and 500 CCDL members within 36 hours submitted testimony against this bill. And it was 400 to 500 to like 19 on the other side. It was like, but that's not how it's not a democracy up there, right? It's not a favor, you know, who's got the most testimonies. So because there was a felony attached to this bill, so if you were caught within that radius, it was actually a felony conviction, it has to go to the Judiciary Committee. Once it made its way over to the Judiciary Committee, we had 1,071 CCDL members reached out to their state representatives and senators, pushing back, saying, please do not do this to us. We can't. We are going to be de facto removed from municipal activities, getting around our neighborhoods. And even though they restricted it down to 250 feet, it's just not enough. And this is the power of knowing your legislators, working with your legislators, and having a good relationship with them. Our legislators, even though we're like the pro 2A folks, are very much in the minority here. They don't have the votes to kill it. They know that.
Right.
They put back and said, we are going to filibuster this bill and you're going to get nut. We're going to be up in a short session and we're going to use a ton of time and we're fighting this one hard. And it's not just even the folks that actually sit in those committees. I mean, they did an amazing job fighting back, but just the general consensus amongst their peers. Of folks that were willing to say, like, I will fight for my constituents on this. And as outnumbered as they were, it was really amazing to see Section 2 of that bill completely stricken out, removed, and lots of disappointment from the original bill sponsors. And they spoke to that about how disappointed they were that they couldn't get that piece through.
So what is the status of this bill? Is it going to just get tied up in committee? Is it going to get a vote?
So all of the gun control is completely removed from the bill, and okay. We have no objection to the remainder of the bill moving forward. So the remainder of the bill is talking about protecting the rights of poll workers and volunteers that are working polls. Obviously, we want everybody to be safe, so we don't have any objection to that. But every bit of gun control or reference to firearms has been completely removed from the bill and cannot come back.
Wow. All right. So no 1,000-foot zone, no 250-foot zone. Nothing. It's going to remain the status quo in terms of where and how you can carry around elections.
That's correct. Yes. All gun control is removed from the bill.
That is fantastic, Holly. And yeah. You know, and again, I mean, this Connecticut Citizens Defense League, I think is, and I know I've said this to you before, but, you know, you all do such an amazing job of being effective in a blue state. As you say, the numbers aren't there in the legislature, right? And so it'd be very easy to say, well, you know, we're just going to raise hell and we're going to complain about everything that gets passed. But that's not being effective, right? I mean, you can be loud and maybe you can raise money off of that. But, you know, your organization exists to protect the Second Amendment rights of Connecticut residents. And so, you know, how do you succeed in something like this when the deck is stacked against you? Is it really truly the power of the grassroots, the power of those individual members?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we are the organization here in the state of Connecticut fighting for your rights. Like, there really isn't any other real notable presence that's doing what we're doing. It's taken years of work. So our members know now when they get that action alert from us and we're calling them to action, guys, we need you to email, we need you to phone call, and they're doing it. Back, I mean, even 5 or 6 years ago, we used to hold up like a list of how many folks would testify on our side versus how many folks would testify on their side. And they had multiple more than we do. I mean, like 5 times the amount, 10 times the amount of people on the other side. But we've turned that tide because we've gotten better at explaining how to testify, making it easy for people, getting them engaged, getting them prepared. And then once you're at that point, now you really need to have those relationships with your legislators. CCDL this year, we have hired a lobbyist. It's the first time we've been able to do that. So now we do actually have a lobbyist up there all the time working for us. And we're very, very proud of that. And having that presence up there is invaluable. That being said, we then now, as we get out of legislative session and we're going into a big election year, we cannot forget that we have to support the people who are helping us and we need to turn seats so they have more peers that they can count on. So that, you know, it's a bigger piece of succeeding during legislative session is succeeding in the elections. So we can't lose seats. We have to support the legislators that are willing to fight for us. We have to make sure that they're sent back up there next year. And then we need to give them additional peers to work with. And it might not be overnight, but if you flip one seat, you flip 2 seats. You know, we used to have a split Senate not too long ago. It was 50-50. We lost it. We've got to take it back. So we are in one of the deepest blue states for gun control. And if we can do this here, it can be done anywhere. It's just, you've got to have the energy, the motivation. I've got amazing volunteers on my committee that are doing this stuff. Our outreach team is fantastic. You ask, they go. They're at gun stores. They're, you name it. Hey, I need somebody at a gun store on Saturday afternoon. I've got a volunteer in 5 minutes. I'll be there all day. What can I do? You know, and they've got their laptop out. They're sending emails to legislators, voter registration. What do you need us to do? because at the end of the day, being a keyboard warrior does nothing. It does nothing. If you get on there and you gripe about how much it sucks or you're going to move and you're just going to go somewhere else, I guarantee you the left, I'm going to call it left, the anti-gun folks in these blue states are moving to beautiful low tax states because it's lovely there, but they are going to bring their politics with them. Oh, so yeah. Nobody is immune from this in our country right now. Yep. So let's contain it.
You know, and I noticed that you stopped to correct yourself. And I do this too. I actually edited one of my stories because listen, let's face it. The Democrat Party is the dominant force for gun control politically in this country. Yeah. But the right of the it's the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Yep. And I know plenty of folks who are on the left who are gun owners. In fact, I know some folks on the left who are starting to become Second Amendment advocates. And I'm curious if you're seeing that in Connecticut as well. Like we recently have seen these stories about these armed neighborhood patrols. And I think it's New Haven, right? Which to me is a whole new face for gun ownership that maybe a lot of these Democratic lawmakers just haven't seen. I ran across a story out of Dorchester, Massachusetts, a couple of weeks ago as well, about how black gun owners in Dorchester are now, I don't want to say accosting, but they are getting in the face of their Democratic representative saying, hey, this gun control bill that you're working on, it's already hard enough for me to exercise my Second Amendment rights. Don't make it even harder for me. And there was a Democratic state representative who said, and I hated the way he phrased it, but whatever, he said, these aren't the gun nuts. He said, these are my friends. These are my family. These are people I know and I've known for years who are telling me this stuff. And I don't know what that's going to mean in terms of his vote. I don't know what that's going to mean in terms of the gun control bill in Massachusetts. But God bless those folks for speaking up and using their voice and reminding these lawmakers that this isn't a right of the right. I don't care how much you hate Republicans. Right. You hurt everybody when you infringe on the right to keep and bear arms.
100%. And it's undeniable that crime is getting out of control in my state and many other states across the country because of the lack of repercussions. People who live in high crime areas need and deserve the right to protect themselves without question. And it was interesting last legislative session when Governor Lamont got his big gun control package here in Connecticut. There's a legislator by the name of Gary Winfield who is historically always opposed to us, always in support of these gun control bills. And he was talking about repercussions for folks who are caught with a firearm without a permit. And he's like, but my constituents do that. They need it. And we're sitting there going, you're making a case for constitutional carry in Connecticut, and you've always voted against us. So it's amazing when the light starts to go off and say, wait a second, that harms my community because I know they do this. And I don't want them to have those penalties because they need the ability to defend themselves in high crime areas. And you go like, that's what we've been saying for 15 years. I think one of the things that is really important and something that you have to learn in this fight is to be approachable and diplomatic. If you go in blazing hell and, tearing it up and saying, bashing legislators publicly, it's one thing to criticize their public policy, but if you make them your enemy, they are never going to speak to you. You have to be approachable and have to be willing to be part of the solution.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, there is certainly these days, there is more than enough room for performative politics. We see that, on both sides of the aisle. Right. But again, if we're talking about effectiveness, if we're talking about getting stuff done, then politics is ultimately about persuasion. It's about bringing people over to your point of view. Milton Friedman, I think, defined it as getting the wrong people to do the right thing. Voting is about getting the right people in place, but politics is about getting the wrong people to do the right thing. And again, CCDL has been very effective, I think, in that regard. I want to ask you about one bill that we were not able to prevent from getting into law. That was the original ban on so-called assault weapons and then the expanded ban on so-called assault weapons that was passed a couple of years ago. What's going on with the challenge Grant versus Lamont, the CCDL lawsuit?
Yeah. So for a lot of folks may not even know this, but so we had our first assault weapons ban back in 2013 following the Sandy Hook tragedy. And CCDL filed a lawsuit called Chu versus Malloy. We filed it all the way up to the Supreme Court, but it was not granted cert. So it didn't move forward, was never heard. Then when the Bruin decision came down, we had the opportunity to file a new case. We have a case out there called Grant versus Lamont, and that re-raised the issue of these firearms that we had been restricted from purchasing in our state. Then last year, House Bill HB 6667 passed, and that was Governor Lamont's even more expansive gun control bill. In fact, I think the bill that passed last year was in some ways worse than the one that we got after Sandy Hook. CCDL worked really hard. Again, the deck was stacked against us. We got 60% of that bill removed. Only 40% of the original content did pass, but that 40% was notable. It removed our ability to own others, pre-bans, a variety of other things. So we went in and we amended our complaint in Grant versus Lamont to include the new items that were removed in 6667. The judge in that case denied our motion for injunctive relief, and then she retired like a week later. It was amazing. So we have appealed it up to the Second Circuit, and the ball is rolling fast right now. In fact, we have a deadline, I think within the next week, to the state has to submit a response to the Second Circuit, then we submit our response. So we're kind of in that stage right now. So that ball is moving in the Second Circuit, and we are appealing that. And we're really, you know, optimistic that like something's got to give. And at some point, hopefully the Supreme Court is going to hear some of these things, because the Second Circuit is historically very unfriendly to our issue. But we've got to get real light on this so that things like this get raised, get moved, that there's, you know, differing opinions around the country, and the court needs to settle it, because it's not acceptable that Americans have different rights based on their zip code. That's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, keep us up to date on that. And we do have the Bianchi case, the Maryland gun ban case. We've got Harold versus Raul, I think, out of Illinois. Both of those are pending before the Supreme Court. They're going to be heard in conference. We'll know if the court's going to take them probably in another month or so. And if they do accept one of those cases, you know, obviously that'd be great news for you folks in Connecticut. But maybe I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the Second Circuit will have a change of heart and recognize that, yes, the Second Amendment is not a second class right. All right. Last thing before we run out of time here, I want to ask you, because this is something that you've been, it's not that you've been keeping it a secret, but it hasn't gotten a lot of attention lately. You are very active in trying to get the various Second Amendment organizations to start talking to one another, right? We know the type of network that Moms Demand Action has, or Everytown has, right? They've got all of these state affiliates. And we've got state level gun groups that are, you know, affiliated with the national level groups as well. But it does seem like we're not quite as connected as the other side is. And you want to change that.
Yeah, I've been working on this for quite some time. I think one of the things that always stands out to me, one of my favorite Second Amendment events of the year, something I will never miss, doesn't matter, not it, like come hell or high water, I'm going to be at Gun Rights Policy Conference every year. For anybody that hasn't been there, it's an amazing event put on by the Second Amendment Foundation and Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. And it brings all of these organizations together to really dig into the content of what is happening, whether it's in the courts, whether it's in state legislatures, and it's really an opportunity for people to talk to each other. This is like my like favorite thing to do every year, because I feel like I'm learning so much, and it's not just about, you know, going to a gun show or going to a trade show. You're like, you're actually digging into the meat and talking to the people that are walking the talk and they're doing it. But one of the frustrations that I have is like, this only happens once a year. We, you know, it's not enough. We want more. We have actually, in January, we had a first conference call of leadership of state 2A orgs. And one of the things that we identified that we really needed was really good technology to make it possible for these folks to connect with one another. We've just launched in the last week a networking platform where folks can get on and start exchanging ideas. How are you handling fundraising? How are you handling red flag laws? What are you doing to engage your membership? How, like, what are you putting in the verbiage for your action alerts? Like, these are all things that we can help each other with, learn from. I think for me, the most important thing is I want organizations to feel that they're there voluntarily. Nobody's asking them to take a position. They remain like they're going to, you know, it's their, they don't, nobody knows their culture and their people and their legislature like their state 2A org does. And I think one of the struggles is when you put it under a national organization, there's some pressure to follow. But in this concept, we just want it to be like a flat exchange of information, just a network of, hey, take what you will, leave tidbits for others. So if there's groups out there, if you haven't already connected with me and you would like to be involved, please email me at president@ccdl.us and we'll get you involved as well. So we can start getting these juices flowing, helping one another and really starting to, let's be on the offense and not on the defense all the time. Let's right. start finding the ways that we start winning instead of just defending ourselves. So that's the plan.
Absolutely. Holly Sullivan, I love talking with you. I always walk away feeling more energized and activated. So thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you to all of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League members for standing up for not just your Second Amendment rights, but our Second Amendment rights as well. And again, president@ccdl.us. If you are involved in a state level organization, you want to start this networking, you want to start talking to folks outside of your own borders. Again, Holly, I can't thank you enough for everything that you do. For gun owners around the country and in Connecticut. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today. And I look forward to doing this again soon.
Thank you for having me, as always.
My thanks to Holly for joining us on the program. They are doing such great work there in Connecticut. CCDL.us, that is the website for the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Now, before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just one second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred. Free speech, right? It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many folks feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, however. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas that the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report, we're going to start there with an infuriating story out of Tennessee. Here's the headline. Unbelievable. Mourning Lebanon family outraged that teen murder suspect was out on bond, accused of killing again. And it is easy to be outraged when you learn about the particulars of this case. 19-year-old Adrian Cameron II, considered a person of interest or a suspect in the killing of a rapper in Memphis, Tennessee, over the weekend. He was out on bond for the 2021 murder of 50-year-old Josh Evans. And Evans' family is appalled that he was on the streets despite several arrests since he was released on bond on that murder charge. Cameron II was just 16 when Josh Evans was killed in 2021. He turned himself into police months later. According to WKRN in Nashville, in the course of their investigation into Evans' murder, police tried to question Cameron's father, Adrian Cameron Sr. Their attempts ended with Cameron Sr. barricading himself inside a Nashville hotel where he shot at officers. Police returned fire and killed Cameron Sr. In March of 2022, Cameron Jr., who goes by Cameron II, turned himself in. Less than 4 months later, after he had been released on bond, Adrian Cameron II was arrested on gun charges in Rutherford County, Tennessee. He's already facing murder charges. He's released. He's arrested for illegally carrying a firearm. And again, bonded out. Evan's family wonders, why was he on the street? He should have still been locked up. And now, after rapper Chris King was shot and killed over the weekend, police say that Cameron II is one of three suspects involved in King's death. He's accused of cutting his ankle monitor shortly after the shooting, by the way. So again, you know, the idea that we're just going to put these suspected violent offenders on an ankle monitor, we'll be able to keep track of them, is absolutely nonsense. In this case, again, you've got somebody who was accused of murder in 2021, has not yet gone to trial, right? Bonded out, arrested for legally carrying a firearm several months later, bonded out, and now again, accused of murder in Nashville, Tennessee. And what are the lefties objecting to in Nashville? Arming school staff, right? They're not upset about the criminal justice system that is continuing to spit out these violent offenders, refuses to hold them behind bars, even if they are accused of committing other violent crimes while they're out on bond. Nope. They're angry because Tennessee lawmakers have said that school districts can, if they choose, allow for armed school staff after they volunteered, after they've been vetted, after they go through 40 hours of training. That's what they're melting down about. They should be pissed off about this, not about protecting kids. Today's Armed Citizen story from South Carolina, where police say a shooting in Georgetown County was self-defense. James Edward McCleary died in the shooting at the Arbor Place Apartments last week, but the man who shot him not facing any charges. Authorities say that they're actually still looking for a man suspected of being involved in the shooting. A guy named Jazwan Gamble, wanted for attempted murder after allegedly shooting into the apartment where the fatal dispute had taken place. Investigators say the shooting happened when two men got into an argument after McCleary came to a woman's apartment. McCleary was her ex-boyfriend. During the argument, authorities say McCleary threatened to shoot her current boyfriend and reached for a gun in his pocket, but the intended victim drew his own firearm and shot first. Sheriff's office says investigators interviewed witnesses, reviewed surveillance footage from the apartment complex, collected physical evidence, including McCleary's firearm. The man who shot McCleary later gave a statement to deputies at the sheriff's office. And according to the sheriff's office, the solicitor determined that the circumstances fall under the stand your ground rule. So while the investigation is still ongoing, they say based on current information and evidence, there will be no charges filed against the man who shot his attacker. Finally, today, in the right place, at the right time, we've been able to do the right thing. A group of Good Samaritans in Shawnee, Kansas, who came to the aid of a man who collapsed while he was riding a bicycle, happened just a couple of days ago. The group of individuals, strangers to each other, saw what was going on, and they all came together to help this man. 17-year-old Marina Johnson says, I watched him fall over, like completely fall over. And I thought he just hit his head, maybe, but then I realized he wasn't moving. So she calls 911, then she runs to a gas station to get help. Another woman named Amber Edwards, spotted the man, still lying on his side, not breathing. She pulled over. She's in her car, hops out, starts performing CPR. She said he was already turning gray. He had no signs of life at all, no breath or anything. Amber Edwards had just undergone abdominal surgery, so she's not in the best of shape herself, but she said that she was thinking about her own loss. She lost a daughter to a fentanyl overdose, and afterwards she became certified or recertified in CPR, started carrying a emergency first aid kit with her everywhere she goes. That includes a CPR shield. She said, I had it. I didn't know if I'd ever need it. So she's performing CPR. Other strangers see what's going on. They stop. They start to aid her in the compressions. And by the time first responders arrived, he was, he was still struggling, I guess. But the first responders continued CPR, used a AED. To shock the man, and that brought his heartbeat back. He was coherent, apparently, and talking to medics before he was loaded into an ambulance to get to the hospital. The Good Samaritans say they'd like to know who this guy is and maybe connect with him, but at this point, they don't know who this stranger was. And the stranger, I guess, now has a better idea of who some of these Good Samaritans are. Hopefully, they will be able to connect, but yeah, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Amber Edwards. The rest of these Good Samaritans, including Marina Johnson, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is all the time we've got for you this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to appreciate you and thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, don't forget to check out BearingArms.com for the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else. News stories and analysis that matter. Because your support matters, and it truly does make a difference. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.